The future calls us on one painful step at a time, and the first rule of life is to survive.
Welcome to the Busy Girls Book Club. We are a podcast that rates and reviews the internet's most popular books and tells you if they're worth reading. I'm Casey.
I'm Catherine.
And I'm Caitlin. And today we are bringing you The Future by Naomi Alderman. Her other book, The Power, was just turned into an Amazon series, I think.
Yep.
So this is the newest one. And it kind of takes place as if it was today or the late 2020s, but like we're speeding towards the apocalypse and all these tech billionaires are preparing for the moment and trying to predict the future of when the apocalypse is going to happen. And yeah, that's how. I don't know what else to say without spoiling. It jumps back and forth in time a little bit. And there's some interesting characters. It's like largely these major tech CEOs and then their closest like companions. And then this survivalist expert are the main characters. And obviously they all have differing opinions on how things go down. So that's kind of what it addresses.
There's a cult in there.
Speculative fiction, I guess.
Yeah, yes. Speculative dystopian type stuff. Somewhere in the sci-fi-ish range.
Yeah, I think sci-fi is the best category for it.
Well, do you guys have reviews?
Indeed, I do. I found a one-star review that I can understand it, so I figured I would get y'all's reaction to it. It was on Goodreads, and it says, "This isn't for me. It's too real. It's like 20 years from now when we realize that we ruined the whole planet with trying to be rich or have the latest thing or didn't care enough about renewable fuel. I refuse to end the year on this book. I'm DNFing. The book is super well written, well thought out, really well composed. If this is your thing, you're going to love it. This is not my thing. I want escapism. I don't want to think about pandemics and the planet dying."
Yeah.
It is. It's fair.
Too close to home.
It's
like when I read Station 11 during the pandemic.
Yeah. Parts of this book, I totally get that. It like touched a place that like I buried after COVID. Like we could emerge from our homes and I like did not want to think about this anymore.
The book does mention COVID, so it's written in a post-COVID world. Yes. So relive that time of your life.
Yeah, rather not. That person's right, but this does touch on it a little bit.
Yeah. However, it was, even though there are definitely, like, one of the characters is definitely Jeff Bezos. One of the characters is definitely Mark Zuckerberg. Like,
the other's Tim Cook.
Okay. I was like, I don't know who the other people are, but Tim Cook, there you go. So, yeah, you can see it's, like, definitely based on our world, which is, you know, could make you more comfortable or more uncomfortable, depending on who you are.
Yep.
I have a 4-star review, just one today. But it says, "Watching billionaires get their shit rocked by a group of queer people and an old man made for a great read."
Yeah.
Yeah.
Period.
Yeah. That's true. I was like, yeah, that is like part of the book that I enjoyed for sure.
I have a 3-star review. It says, "When accidentally being a sugar baby saves you from the apocalypse, but also forces you to play Lord of the Flies with billionaires."
Yeah.
Yes.
Immediately thought Lord of the Flies in 2020.
Yes. That is literally, someone asked me how to explain it, and I was like, Lord of the Flies with adults.
Yeah. So if you needed a different book jacket summary, there you go. That review did it for you.
Yep. 100%.
Okay, so this is not our most highly reviewed book, though it is still popular. The Goodreads rating is 3.9 out of 5, and the overall Amazon rating is 4.2 out of 5. What did you guys think?
This was a 3 for me.
Shook.
I know. I wanted to like it. It might have been a 4 until the end. I think it just so. I know it's supposed to be kind of realistic, but it was like, and the magic touch at the end, you know? Mm-hmm. And I was like, I know, like, you made your point, so you can wrap it up, but that just gave me weird vibes. Also, how the one character resolved things at the end. I'm not going to say more. I was like, what? I was like, why is that person forgiving that person? No.
Okay,
I do understand that.
Yeah,
all the end stuff.
I think that's a valid critique because the ending of this book, like until the very final resolution, you kind of learn who's okay and who's not okay. But the whole last 50 pages gave me such anxiety. I don't even think I can describe in words how
it
like
also like so slow until that point.
Yeah, it sped through that ending.
I just, not for me, with the few little time back and forth, which were fine, but mixed in with the like internet forum posts on the Bible, which like I understand the illustrated point. It just went way too deep for what I was hoping for from the book. When I read a dystopian book, I'm looking for like an action book usually. And this was not that. And I don't know. It was just, and none of the characters are likable. Sorry.
I think I would argue one of them is.
Yeah, I'd argue one of them.
Which is why the ending is so tense, but we'll get into that later.
Anyway, 3 stars. Yeah. Not mad I read it, but not going to be like, everybody needs to read this book.
Okay. I definitely like the book a lot more than you, but I do understand your points. I loved it. I gave it 5 stars. I was obsessed with it. It has everything that I like in a book. Complicated, morally gray characters. I love that it was like a dystopian end of the world book, but it wasn't about like vigilante militant groups. It was about like politics and how to ensure survival from like a political perspective. Like, who do you align with? What will happen in governments? How do you, as an individual, like move in these spaces to like ensure your survival? I thought it was so interesting. I feel like it's a type of survival book that is really only written by Naomi Alderman. We'll get into this in a second, but me and Catherine have both read another one of her books. Caitlin, did you read it as well?
Mm-mm.
No, okay, I couldn't remember. But it's also sort of an end of the world type book, but like a very different type of end of the world. And I just love it. I love the way she really makes writing about the end of the world like really realistic and like not sensationalized, like sensational things happen, but it's all about like what real people are doing. And in this book, also a lot about like how billionaires and like the disproportionate allotment of wealth in our society would impact the end of the world. And I was obsessed. I'm like, could not get enough. I was like so glued to this book. I loved it.
Yeah, I'm taking Casey's side on this. I also gave it 5 stars. I think Naomi Alderman, she has this way of delving into the human condition and like humanity in general. And like, she has such a good and descriptive way, but also simple way of looking at humanity and looking at humans. And then also on a macro level of like the whole world and how one person can change the entire future of the world, but also on a micro level, looking at how one choice can impact this, this, and this, and how the dominoes fall and how when people meet up, that can change the course of history. And it just like, she writes really clever characters. Like, no one's an idiot. Everyone's really, really smart in their own ways, but they're complex. They're morally gray. I didn't like hate anyone really, like surprisingly, like even the tech CEOs, I felt they had a purpose. And so I didn't like hate any of the characters. Like, I didn't like them, that's for sure. But I think they brought an interesting perspective to like, you get what you get when you mess with this kind of future predictive software and predicting when the world will end instead of actively trying to help it. And so I think I liked the internet forums because I didn't remember the Sodom and Gomorrah. I heard the name multiple times, but I try to block out most Bible verses and stories from my childhood. So this actually allowed me to take a different lens to it. And I completely am rethinking what I say when I say apocalypse, because apocalypse could just be the destruction of a civilization. So we've had multiple apocalypses on this earth before. And that's wild to think about. I had never thought about that before. So 5 stars, I will read any of her books.
Yes. It's one of those books where I feel like I'm just going to keep returning to it in my mind. Especially because someone once, I read this like on the internet somewhere, but it's one of those things that just always stuck in my brain. It says like the Bible is currently like interpreted as moral teachings, which is fair, like to a certain extent it is, but the Bible can also be read as survival teachings. And I don't know, this book really like personified that in a way I really liked.
Okay. Well, we differ, but I do not like disagree with anything you're saying. I just like it at less power than you do. The ending is really what gave me. I was like, no.
I can but, understand that.
I can too. I liked it, but I get why you didn't.
Yeah. So this is an interesting one. I feel like we could argue either way, but is it more plot or character driven?
So I think that actually depends on the character, because sure, there are characters who I think their arcs are plot driven because they are not in control at a certain point. But there are other characters who are really driving the plot themselves and actually create the plot for other characters. And in that case, I think the argument I would make for them is that the story is more character driven from them.
I think it is character driven because when you have, yeah, that multi-perspective, I think if one character or a group of characters or someone is controlling the plot, that is technically a character driven book. And I think it takes on a plot that has already been done before. So it's like a historical plot almost that people are manipulating. So I think I would argue character driven.
I sort of agree both ways. Like, I think Casey's right in that it really depends which perspective you're reading at the time, because some characters are definitely a victim of the plot and then some characters created the plot. I mean, it's not a book about like character development, but also there's some of it, but like, so it's not that kind of character driven, but like there is one character who's definitely steering the ship.
Yeah, but I do feel like the overall point is like Naomi Alderman is basically asking the question, like, how did we get here? So, like, the ending, you're reading, like, how did we get here? Because the characters end up making these, like, wild choices, like, crazy choices with, like, huge implications for, like, all of humanity. And the book is sort of about explaining to you, like, how humans act when they're desperate. And, like, how do you save the world, basically? And can you save the world? So, I already mentioned this a little bit, but the second question is, have you or would you read other books by the author? Me and Catherine read The Power by Naomi Alderman, which is also an end of the world story. But in that book, women develop this superpower and it flips basically the entire gender dynamic that the world is built on, and it kind of causes the end of the world. So that book is very similar structure, like multi-POV followed over time, but more in like the fantasy speculative world than this book.
Yeah. And it's, but there is elements you can see that it's the same author, because using elements of like historical documents, but also like as the plot goes on, the documents are about the plot. Like it's very interesting. Like they use his, she uses the chapters instead of like the I am messages. She uses like exhibits from a museum about the time period that we are discussing. So it's very interesting. It almost reads like a historical document, an historical account of an event that changed human history.
So I have not read another Naomi Alderman book. Actually, I was just telling the other dude that I had this as an arc and kind of just forgot I had it and never read it until now. So, oops. My three rating doesn't mean I wouldn't read another book by her. Like, I could be compelled. And, like, the power has been on my TBR. I just haven't gotten to it. So I have not read other books, but am willing to give the other books a shot.
I will say The Power is actually much darker than this book.
Oh, like, yeah.
This book sort of ends on a, at least, like, semi-empowering message. Like, not totally, but I would say in the end, things are kind of looking up. The Power is a lot about, like, mob violence. And so it's, like, it's a really dark book.
But I said I like the action-y dystopia.
But it's not really action-y. It's hard to explain.
I would say it's more action-y than this book.
Yes. Yeah. But it's still, like, very much about, like, politics and how, like, a few powerful leaders create society, essentially. So it's more about politics than action, but it is more action. But I just want to warn everyone, it's very dark.
Oh, yeah. Not for the faint of heart.
Yeah. Okay, so what about the pacing of this book?
I read it in a day, so pacing was great for me. No complaints.
I cannot believe you were in a day.
Yeah.
Yeah, no. That is
crazy. I loved it. I think it still took me 5 days to read it. I think five. And, like, I wanted to pick it back up, but, like, I was busy and I don't know. It's also just, like, a lot. Like, it's a lot in philosophy. It's a lot in Bible stories. There's very, like, tense and stressful moments. Like, I don't know. I couldn't have read this book in a day.
No. Yeah, I understand that. I had a deadline and I had a day to read it. And so I got the audiobook and started listening to it in between stories at work. And then that's how it got me into it. And so, but I never wanted to put it down. So that's why I say the pacing is good, is because, like, I didn't feel forced almost.
Yeah.
It took me a few days to read. It was probably, like, the same as Casey. I got, like, I was traveling and I got really sick. So I actually don't know when all I read it. The last, like, week and a half have been kind of a blur for me, but I read the book during it and I don't think the pacing was bad at all. I couldn't read it in a day. Like, I think I needed probably to take the breaks that I did, but I think there were good places to take breaks, especially because it's kind of broken up into parts and then chapters within the parts, and then, like, they're short chapters, so it's easy to pick up and put down.
Yeah. I'm actually glad you mentioned that, because I really loved the division of chapters into shorter chapters. Mm-hmm. I feel like more people should do that.
It definitely makes it so much easier, especially if you're reading on a Kindle, because then it tells you, like, your reading speed, 5 minutes to read this chapter. And I'm like, oh, I can read another one then. How about another one? And then I just keep going.
Yeah. So to further explain, like, the book jumps points of view. But then every time you change points of view, that person gets, like, five sub-chapters, probably on average. So it's not like you're just flipping, flipping, flipping. It's like you get sort of a while in one person's perspective, and then you flip, and then the timeline sort of shifts based on who you flip to.
Right. Normally, I don't like timeline shifting books as much as other books, but this one, it was actually, like, I was never lost. Mm-hmm. So while it did, like, sometimes I was like, ugh, come on, get to this part. But, like, I was never, it made sense.
Right.
Yeah. I think I would have not liked it if we had just flipped back and forth, staying in a linear timeline. I think this book needed the shifting timelines in order to make sense.
Yeah, because you need to, there's, like, five really important players in the book, five or six, maybe seven, whatever, doesn't matter. But you only get a few of their perspectives. You don't get all seven. But it's like, if you don't know what the other groups are doing at the same time that that person is doing what they're doing, like, the plot just, like, doesn't make sense, because you have to know how everyone's using their time as, like, the sort of clock ticks down. Anyway, final question before we get to the spoilers and the busy girl reading. Would you watch a movie or TV show or book?
I don't know. It's kind of a hard one to conceptualize.
I would say yes, if you would have to figure out how to weave in the Sodom and Gomorrah online chat forum stuff.
Yeah.
But otherwise, yeah, I think it could be interesting. And I feel like there's tons of movies that already kind of go this direction, just not to this depth.
Right. I think this would actually make a really compelling movie. I agree with you, Caitlin. I feel like certain aspects would have to be reimagined and cut out. Like, I can't even think the survivalist forum could be incorporated. I feel like that would have to just come through, like, Martha's flashbacks. Because Martha's
father. A lot of flashbacks.
Yeah, Martha's father. So I don't think this is a spoiler, but one of the characters' dads is, like, this religious fanatic, and his teachings are sort of important to the book. But yeah, I think it would just have to be done via flashbacks instead of, like, a forum.
Yeah.
But I think it could be interesting.
Yeah. I mean, I would have to see how it's done. But yeah, I would watch a movie if it looks well done.
Yeah.
And had a little more action.
I'm sure they would add in some more.
They would have to, basically, yes. If they were going to make it a movie.
I feel like they would just reorganize it. So, like, all the events would happen. They'd just be spaced out differently. Yeah. Because the pacing of a movie is just different. So you'd need different points to hit at different times.
It would open with the mall scene.
Oh, it really would. It would. Yeah. That's a good idea. Caitlin for producer. Okay. Anyway, now I want to hear y'all's busy girl rating.
I think I can't really give it a 5 because I feel like it's a little bit of a complex novel that requires some space in your brain. So I'll give it a 4. But I still think it's a worthwhile read, and I think it's a fairly quick read. It's just, like, it has kind of taken over my brain space for the past day.
I'll stick with my 3. I think while we might enjoy reading this kind of book, there are definitely people who would get to some of the parts of it and be like, nope, and bounce. It isn't as short as I kind of expected it to be. I don't know. It's not for everybody. It's a very unique topic interest, I feel like. You have to really be interested in dystopian, but also in, like, environmental stuff to really, like, dive into it.
Yeah.
I'm just like, it's not like bad, but it's not like, oh my gosh, that was so easy to read. I'm not Catherine. I can't read it in a day.
Yeah, I would not have done that either. I mean, I think I'm going to agree with Catherine. And Caitlin, I do see your points. Like, I think I would describe this book as dense. Like, it's not long, but there's just, like, there's a lot of information in every scene. Like, there's, which I love, because, like, every single person, every single scene in the book has a lot of utility, and you learn important information about the characters, and you learn important information about where they're going.
It's a complex topic, though, so it takes a lot of words.
But you actually really have to think about it. Like, you really cannot read this book on autopilot.
Also, if anyone read this on audiobook, God bless you.
I did part of it.
Yeah, oh.
They separate it. So they had 5 different voice actors.
Really?
Yeah.
That helped, but I still don't know how you do, like, the online forums and stuff. Anyway.
They did IM messages. Like, you could hear the click, click, beep, beep, like, whenever a message was sent.
I would still be lost. Anyway.
I thought it was an interesting way of doing it.
Yeah. They obviously, like, took their best shot at it. I thought it was super enjoyable, but I agree. I just think you have to enjoy more of, like, a political novel. And you also have to, like, kind of enjoy a thought experiment.
It's definitely for budding sociologists and people that like to think about the human experience and condition and are willing to dissect the Bible in a different way. Having an open mind with those things.
Yes. And so, like, the job I have currently, I'm a reporter, and I work with a reporter who focuses on technology and government as his beat, which is a horrifying thing to know a lot about. And I actually don't know that I would have enjoyed this book as much without having known him, because the way I'm in a fellowship, so we get like lessons, and his lesson is all about like how to stop the government from spying on you so much, and how to stop like companies like having as much just data about you that they can kind of weaponize. And it's actually really horrifying. Like even his like 1 hour long like data safety for dummies was like really, really scary. And so I think I read this book totally differently, just knowing actually how realistic some of this stuff is. Like we're not actually that far from these things as like it may seem. Like the science fiction part of the book is actually like a lot less fiction and a lot more like science that we already have.
Oh, yeah. I would say it's more speculative.
Fiction. Yeah. Yeah.
So, once again, not for everybody. Some people might really be freaked out by this.
Right. And so that's my really long-winded way of saying I do think there's a lot of like prior knowledge you kind of need, or like interest you need to make this book worth reading.
Yeah.
And so I'm going to give it a 4 because I still think it's really great and it's a really great, like, interesting book, but it's dense and a little niche.
Okay. That brings us to our spoiler alert section. So if you haven't read this book, I highly recommend stopping here and reading it and then coming back and listening to our discussion, because we've got a lot to discuss.
Yes.
Now turn your brains on.
Yes.
Unfortunately, I like having mine off. So question one is, if you had unlimited wealth, and a software to tell you when the end of the world was very seriously and legitimately coming, would you use it to save yourself, or would you try to help others and prevent, you know, quote unquote, the end, as Naomi Alderman sets it up in this book, the quote unquote future?
I don't think I'd want to know when it was coming. Because if the world's ending, I'm not trying to be here anymore. That's just the truth. Like, I had a conversation once. It was like, so there's a rocket ship to Mars. The world is ending. Are you going? I was like, no, I'm not supposed to be in space. What are you talking about? Like, Mars. If it's ending, it's ending. I'm ending too. I don't know. I'm always very at peace with myself. It would be sad and it would be horrible, but I'm not trying to predict it. Also, I feel like we've lived through so many events now that they're like, it's the end.
Yeah.
I feel like the past like 5 years has really changed us. We've become more nihilistic.
If I
have
power though, and I could change some of that stuff.
Yeah.
I would want to change that stuff. Like if I had the money to do that, then yes. But not only because the world is going to end in this amount of days, not because I know that, you know?
Right. For me, it's sort of a question of, okay, if I have all this unlimited wealth and software, I'm assuming I have the power to try to salvage the world. If I'm in the position to try to salvage the world, I think I would do so. However, there's a reason I'm not a tech billionaire, is because I just don't have the morals and drive and intentions of the people who become tech billionaires. If I had unlimited wealth and software, but I didn't have the power to try to prevent the end, or I didn't feel confident I could make a difference, you know, this is part of why I didn't hate the tech billionaires, is because I really might do it. Like, I think in the event of the end of the world, which my calculation also personally is different because I'm type 1 diabetic. So there's just like literally no way for me to survive the end of the world. Like I simply would die. But if you take this out of the equation and I'm just, you know, my body works right.
You can harvest my pancreas when I'm done for.
I really don't want you literally. I don't know if this is, people know this. The history of diabetes is that how they figured out insulin is they literally blended up a pig pancreas, injected it into someone, and it helped. And that's how they realized, like, insulin. And from there, like, started the process of, like, creating synthetic insulin. But literally, you just have to, like, blend up a pancreas and inject it into yourself. And I was like, simply no. Also, it's not enough to, like, live. Like, you prevent death, but you're not, like, healthy.
No, that's a good point.
Yeah.
So also you acquire. It's just like, you know, it's
so
like
Casey's
many.
In a bunker with all the insulin. Cool.
Yeah.
So that's a long-winded way of saying I can understand the urge, though. If you don't feel like you can make a significant dent in what's happening, why you would sequester yourself and your family. Because if you can't save everybody, you might as well save the people you care about. But yeah, I just cannot fathom myself being in a situation that like any of these things would mean anything to me.
That's why it's a hypothetical.
We already lived through one pandemic, and let me tell you, I just sat on my couch and bought a new cat.
I bought a shit ton of puzzles and watched Grey's Anatomy a ton.
Yeah.
I've gotten lazier since the pandemic, let's be real. If I had unlimited wealth, I mean, I think the main part of this question that I'm fascinated by is because these tech billionaires, in order to stay in power, and like they were monopolies, essentially, let's be real, that were talking and colluding with one another. They utilize their software and data to mine all of that information from their users to manipulate them to keep them on their apps. And that's kind of like the main crux of why the group decides to off them, is because like they notice that you could be using this software to manipulate people to do good instead of manipulate them to stay on your app and keep you scrolling and watching. And so I think that's the main thing I would do, because I don't know if I think billionaires can do more, and I think they should do more, and I think they should be donating a lot more of their wealth, because like $1 million to them is fucking nothing. That's chump change. Like they could be doing more to help the world, but I don't want like performative activism where they just donate, throw a bunch of money at a thing and nothing happens. It just kind of like exists. So I would hope that if I had the ability to run that software, that yeah, I would manipulate people to do good and manipulate them into actually giving a shit about other people and the world and animals and climate change, and convince people that climate change is real and that we need to do something about it like ASAP. I agree with Caitlin. I don't want to know when the world ends. I have an anxiety disorder. If I knew that was happening, I would just have a panic attack and then a stroke. So I've always said, because I guess we grew up in the time of The Walking Dead, so I feel like zombie apocalypses just always were on our minds as kids, at least on mine. I always said I would get super fucking high on LSD or acid and then run into these zombies. And that would be how I died. Like, I was like, I'm not going to survive this. I'm going to be the first one to die. And that's okay. I'm just going to have a real good party and then go out with a bang.
Yep, that's kind of how I feel. I'm like, if it's my time, it's my time.
Right.
Yeah, I'm never going to space. Fuck that.
And I don't want to be around to see everyone I love die anyway, so.
Right. And as this book touches on, shit gets dark. Like, when it comes down to it, like, people will fight for their survival, and people choose to do that sometimes.
I'm not cut out to live in the woods and hunt and forage.
Yeah, I'm not.
I can't. Sorry.
I'm not going to fight. Yeah.
I would die from, like, getting a splinter and an infection. So, you know, just take me at the beginning. I'm not the strongest. Darwinism would win.
You have died of dysentery.
Right.
Yeah, I am, like, quite literally kept alive by modern technology. But Catherine, I really liked one of your points that you were making, and it leads into our second question really well, because what you're describing is like your desire to like change technology to make it good is like literally what happens in the book. Like the team on Team Good uses all the algorithms and all the horrible shit that like the tech billionaires were doing, and they tweak it to try to get good outcomes instead of monetary outcomes, because the tech billionaires were so it's so crazy, they're like circular thinking, but it was like they're so focused on making money that they refuse to change the way their technology works. But the way their technology works is fueling the end of the world, which like makes their money meaningless. And so it was like this weird like cyclical thing where they're like so obsessed with being wealthy and powerful and like so committed to like maintaining that they were just like willing to fuel the end of the world, like in the hopes that they could be one of the few people who would like emerge victorious, as opposed to preventing the end of the world, like at risk of being moderately less powerful and wealthy.
Here's the thing though, and kind of part of my issue with the ending good is relative to whoever is using the term. Mm-hmm. And as Catherine said, she used the word, I would manipulate things to make them better. You're yeah. still manipulating. Like 100%. The general population still has no say in any of this future. You're still using the tech to twist their thoughts in a direction. Yeah. So like, while yes, there is like a good team and a bad team, they each think they're doing good. And that's just human nature, and it's messy and it's icky. Mm-hmm. And that's why I didn't like, we can get to the ending later, but like, that's another we can, and it's more sociology, you know, like,
right.
Good is relative.
So I would push back on your thing of like, both teams were good.
No, they both thought they were doing good.
No, I don't think the tech billionaires thought they were doing good. I thought they were chasing profits, which is fair. That's how they got there.
But they thought protecting themselves and their families was good.
No, I'm pretty sure they thought that was pretty selfish.
Yeah, I think they knew they were doing bad and took steps to rationalize it.
Yeah.
I think they downplayed their own perception of how much of a difference they could make so they could feel content abandoning humanity. But I think they still knew what they were doing was wrong, to build multi-million dollar bunkers and sequester themselves away and not let
them yes. go in. But also at one point, Martha is talking about like her goal is just to like make enough wealth so she has these perfect kids and they have perfect kids and mm-hmm. it's good for her family, you know?
Right.
Not Martha. Ellen. Sorry.
Ellen. Yeah. Yeah.
But so like in her head, and she was arguably maybe the least evil of yes. the three.
Yeah, I think so.
I mean, they kind of said that in the book at one point too. But, you know, to her, it's good for her. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying she thinks it's good in the big broad term, but
right. But yeah. Also, something I loved is that so our team, who is like the quote unquote good guys, like Martha and Jen and all of them. Not Jen, actually, Martha, yeah. And then the ones who
Stella, Albert,
yeah, I forget their names. There we go. They still organize it in a way where they are in power and are ultimately mm-hmm. made wealthy and powerful too.
Correct.
Like their goals are like objectively, like morally better, but they still use the companies to be powerful, influential, and wealthy. So it's like even their good is sort of like good asterisk, like better than before. But what is our real baseline for what is
good? But that point is also made in the Bible story, like Abraham yeah. was also rich. Mm-hmm. He was just yeah. a better person than Lot.
Yeah. Right. Like they had better morals and they wanted to do more with the companies because they could see how their algorithms and how
right.
their meddling in different countries and in arms races and drones and all these stuff was actively fueling tensions in the world and creating sea level rises and animal extinction. So they were doing better, but then like at the end, I was like, I mean, I'm glad they won, kind of, but mm-hmm. I do worry because I'm a believer of like absolute power corrupts absolutely. Mm-hmm. And if you are given that much power over the world, you are going to get corrupted by it no matter what. Like, even if you had good intentions going in, that's no guarantee it stays that way. And I think the book touches on that as well, just saying like, history goes on, the world goes on.
Well, and you did shady shit to make it happen.
Yeah. I mean, deserved, but shady shit nonetheless. I mean, yeah, that's
and
why
you
I
didn't want to kill him, but essentially you killed two of the three anyway. So,
oh my gosh. And the way they just like fully, like, that is like, so the story of Lot mm-hmm. the whole time, I was like, okay, how is this going to come back? And then it finally comes back in the end because they fully sacrifice Lei Jen. I hope you say it.
Jen.
Jen. They fully sacrifice her. Like, she is like the one good person that they are willing to burn. And it's crazy. And that's why the end of the book was so anxiety inducing for me, because she didn't deserve it. She didn't deserve to be there. Like, the whole time she was an individual who was just like a piece of a puzzle trying to like figure things out and like survive, and she had really no power, in the scheme of things. Like, she was like a normal person in the sense that we are.
She had a traumatic experience that triggered her survival instincts.
Mm-hmm.
And that's her coping mechanism. And they used her for it.
Yeah. And that's sort of our first sign and like clue that the group of quote unquote good guys is like not really good, because they were willing to sacrifice an innocent person quite selfishly, and they could have saved her much earlier. They left her there for years and they could have saved her. There was no reason for them to keep her there, but yep. They just wanted to get away with it.
Yep.
Yeah, they were worried about it getting out there in the world that these tech billionaires are still alive and that there was a whole plot to get them on this island.
Yes.
So we've mentioned a bit the Bible stories, and it's basically Abraham and Lot and Sodom and Gomorrah. For those who are not biblical, what they teach you in Sunday school is Sodom and Gomorrah was a place full of sin. A lot of people use, this is a side note, a lot of people use this as a reference to how gay people should not exist. That's not even the message in the Bible, by the way. So, like, don't misconstrue that. It's just there was all sorts of sin and depravity in the place, and people didn't care for other people. And God decided to smite it. And Lot and his family were good, supposedly. And so they were allowed to leave, but the rule was they couldn't look back. But Lot's wife looked back and turned into a pillar of salt. And then there's some weird other stuff that happens afterwards that it touches on, but the main story is, like, when you're taught it in Sunday school, it's kind of listen to God, don't look back, look forward to the blessings you've been given, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's also like a sign that, like, wow, God is merciful, he's also wrathful. And so yeah, anyway, so it talks about this and it uses a story to give a couple different messages. So we kind of talked about how, like, would you save the entire city for the one? And so we just touched on that one. It also talks about, like, do unto others what they do unto you. And is that valid? If it keeps you moving forward. And then kind of touches on wanderers versus stationary people, which is like a huge message within the book, the foxes and the rabbits. What did you think of all these little lessons extracted from this one Bible character?
I thought it was fascinating because, I mean, and it touches on in the book, like you talked about, like the disclaimer, like sodomy is that the crime comes from the biblical reference of Sodom, which has been debunked as like, no, that's not what the Bible says. And even in the book, they say, like, we take this as a really anti-gay story, but it actually, if you read it, it's not. It's been translated and misconstrued improperly.
It basically says everyone was having sex with everyone.
Yeah. And so
everyone's hoes.
Yeah. Yeah. And like, yeah, it never says anything about LGBTQ people. Like,
Sodom was not smited because they were gay people. Okay.
No, that is not the reason.
Yeah, it's actually because they didn't take care of poor people and didn't care about each other. But
and were raping and pillaging. Like, it wasn't good. And then I think it was really interesting because, like, I didn't really remember the story, but then I looked it up afterwards just to get some context. And then the fox and the rabbit was really interesting because, like, I remember in all of my history classes, we start off with hunter and gatherer culture versus, like, agriculture culture. And I just remember when we were learning about hunter-gatherers, it's always like the first week of class and like, that's it. That's all you talk about it. But it always seemed like that was a culture in which there was a lot more equality. There was a lot more, everyone had their role and women were treated a lot more nicely. It seems like the society was about lifting everyone up to survive and to eat. And so, like, the hunters may not always catch the food. So the women would be the gatherers and they would have the steady stream of food and agriculture in some way as they move from place to place. And so I think it was very interesting because definitely the book was a pro rabbit kind of culture and how when we became foxes and became these stationary, when we became rabbits, we were foxes before. When we became rabbits, we started hoarding wealth and
Scarcity mindset.
And that it wasn't really bad the other way. We just didn't want to have to put in the effort to hunt for our own food. And I don't know. It was just very interesting. Like, I'd never heard of like that kind of reference of foxes for hunter-gatherers and rabbits for stationary people.
Yeah, I thought I really loved it because it really did make me think about our society in a new way. You know, like, we're educated people who I think are generally interested in sort of like these sort of grander philosophical questions. And so, you know, it's not like this is the first time any of us have thought about this or like sought out material to ponder this. But I gave major props to this book because I really had never thought about this and like the way our society changed when we started to value ownership, not as caring for something so that everyone may benefit, but ownership in I protect myself and protect my own resources so that I can survive versus like surviving as a community. And I thought it was really interesting because I think community is like a concept I'm very interested in because I think most happy people in the world have a community, and a lot of our like social ills are from just like lack of community. And really sort of the central message in this book is like how important it is to have like a trusted community, because even in our world, like wealth and like richness aside, I think most people who are doing well or who feel in their hearts that they're doing well, it's because they have a community, because they don't feel like they have to have ownership in that like rabbit sense. They feel like they can have ownership in more of a fox sense because there's this net of like sharing and care where you never feel like something is the end of the world. Like, you know, other people will care for you.
Yeah, until you become Sodom and your community is all terrible people. But there's pros and cons to both.
Right. Because like my counter argument to like the rabbit fox theory is like, there's a reason that society grew as rabbits and not as foxes, because there is like there are benefits. And like Martha also makes these points because she takes apart sort of her dad's own teachings. But it's like there's benefits to both. And I think kind of the bigger question in the book is like, how do you balance the benefits of each?
Yeah,
because it's like, is it possible to be too much fox? And is it possible to be too much rabbit? And is it possible to be both?
Well, yeah, so innovation comes from rabbit culture. When you establish roots, that's where you get innovation and industrial revolution.
So you touched on Martha, and Martha is mm-hmm. the one using this narrative in an online forum to mm-hmm. educate people, which is funny because her dad is the cult leader who came up with this. So she's spinning it in like not so radical of a way and using it. Mm-hmm. But she's using this idea of fragments and pieces, and she touches on innovation, man versus machine. What did you think of Martha's story and how she spun these cult teachings to try and save the world, but also being a part of the world?
I liked it because she used it without truly being radical, which is kind of what her narrative is like. Her dad didn't necessarily have terrible ideas. He was just also like a radical person and like also was drunk on power. Like, for all his talk about being like a community and being rabbits, like he was still the top of the pyramid that he had created and like exercised a lot of control over the people around him. And so I think that gave Martha sort of like an intelligent way of looking at it, where she sort of believed in a lot of her dad's core teachings, but like in a more like stable and like holistic and picked apart way, where she was like, his belief was like, if we all convert to being rabbits, there will be no more pieces. But her point was that like pieces occur even in nature, like even animals who can't eat still hunt. And so like the idea that like there is one way to like achieve holistic unity is just not true. Like the reality of the world is the reality that there are pieces. So yeah, I liked it because I felt it endorsed her dad's perspective it introduced her dad's perspective without endorsing it.
Yeah. I think you hit the nail on the head with, like, he was drunk on power. She was doing this on an anonymous platform. So she wasn't using it to get power or to get followers. And I think that's the issue with cult leaders, is they believe they are some sort of prophet or messiah, and that they are the one to, you know, save us all, and that you need to follow them and listen to them, and they are above almost their own teachings. So I think that's where you go wrong. But I think Martha saw through her father, but also, like, she admitted, like, I gave my father some of his teachings. Like, I was the one that came up with the ideas, and he never gave me credit. And that's when she realized, like, oh, he really just wants to be the smartest person in the room. And she learned from that experience and that trauma and took it to help others, but also to make sure that she never had to experience that kind of life again. So she's interesting.
She is interesting. And the whole time you're kind of thinking, oh, Martha is this one good person who's going to change the world, until we get to the end.
Yeah.
And you're like, whoa, you also did some shady shit to make this happen. Yeah. So, and she sets up this bunker on this island that no one knew she set up. It was very Enochite of her anyway. Mm-hmm. And then sends the tech billionaires to this island with said bunker she has set up unannounced to anybody else in case she needed to ride out the end of the world. Like,
yeah, she's the mastermind behind all of it.
Yes. Which, before, there's so much philosophy in this book, we could talk about this for ages, but I do want to ask you guys just one concrete question about the characters, because there's a lot of really complicated characters. Who is your favorite and who is your least favorite?
Probably Jen is my favorite. She is really interesting with her story about growing up in Hong Kong and then getting becoming a refugee after the People's Republic of China takes over. And I think she has an interesting survivalist story, but also creating and cultivating her own network and platform and influencer status. And also, she sees the world as it is, really. She doesn't see it through rose-colored glasses because she's a survivor of an experience of trauma. And then least favorite, obviously, like Zimri. He was horrible. I hated him.
On the other end, I think my favorite is Salah, because she is a jaded woman, and she uses that, and she is a badass coder in her own right. And I also liked her approach to the future, quote unquote, the most. I love a jaded woman with power who is like, I'm gonna fix this.
Yeah, that was very cool. So my favorite was definitely Marius, the like Romanian like ex-Soviet. I just thought he was so funny, and I loved how selfless he was. And I think that, like, if this were really to happen, he is probably the closest to like how I would react, because he thinks he has an opportunity to join Jen in salvation. Like, they're not really sure what's happening, and obviously the world doesn't actually end, but he's willing to give up his, you know, golden ticket, as the book puts it, to stay with the people he loves and stay in the community he loves. And I just thought that was like really sweet. And I love that he was like yelling and like always so like crass, but it's just because he cared so much. Like, I really loved and appreciated him.
He also gives it, it's the whole man versus machine rhetoric in a different way that we haven't even touched on, but
yeah.
The idea
that's way too deep for this.
Yes, man manipulates machine.
Yeah.
And machine does not have brain or man's strength. Yeah.
Right. I love the distinction between like iteration and thinking.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We can't describe what computers do because we don't really have words for it. And so we put it in terms of humanity.
Yeah. He's kind of like, don't be afraid of AI.
Yeah. Because
AI is still not a human.
Yeah.
Right.
It just has more free time and less free will.
Right. So I loved him. I honestly didn't really have a least favorite. I mean, probably like Zimri if I had to pick one. But I also love Jen and Martha. So surprisingly, a lot of characters to love, even though they're all crazy.
Okay. What did you think of the ending? It turns out that Jen agreed to go to the island, despite knowing.
So this is where, why did we get this whole runaround from Jen's point of view about like, oh no, I'm on this island. Where am I? What's happening? And then find out she was in on it the whole time.
Okay, I actually...
That pissed me off.
I do actually agree with you because the book never does it any other time. So I think it's like a little bit of a cop-out that they use it in that circumstance. And I actually liked it better, the idea that she had just sort of figured it out on her own, because the pieces are all there and she was really smart and just like ruthlessly like practical. So like she could have put it together by herself.
I assumed she had, because it sounded like what's his face had put it together himself. So I was like,
Link.
Mm-hmm. Link, yeah. So I was like, oh, she figured it out. And then she's like, no, Albert read me in and asked me if I wanted to come here.
I agree with y'all. I almost wish they didn't have that. But if it was Albert talking through the suit, he could have told her at any point in time while she was on the island. So like they could have made it so it was that way instead of her like
agreeing. We could have known she was an insider is what I'm saying. You didn't have to fool us into thinking she just got dropped there on accident.
To be fair, that was the only twist I didn't see coming.
Because it was stupid. Yes.
Yeah, because it was stupid. Yeah, I agree with that. Yeah. It did surprise me, but I think the book actually makes more sense if she figures it out by herself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so like the fact that she knew about it kind of, I think, was maybe thrown in there to make it less bad that she sort of forgives Martha, because then she had more autonomy in ending up there. But I just think the point still stands that they left her there. Like Martha didn't, but whatever Jen knew, however she figured it out, the other billionaires conspired, or the other, you know, group of vigilante whatever's conspired together to hold that information away from Martha and leave her there and abandon her.
3 years.
And they would have left her there forever. I don't care what they say. If Martha had not.
That's why I think she comes to this moment of peace at being there before you find out she knew. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I think if you're there not knowing if anyone's ever going to come for you, you can find that peace. But if you're sitting there like, where are these assholes? Are they coming to get me? And then she would have gone crazy like Ellen.
Right. So yeah, I did like the ending still. It didn't bother me as much as it bothered you, but I do agree. I don't think it needed to go down that way. And it did cheapen what I think is otherwise a pretty perfect book.
I just felt lied to and betrayed by the narrative.
I mean, I guess that's fair. Mm-hmm. I did like the fact that the idea that she was pulling the strings all along to like make them confuse the three billionaires and make them go against each other and hate each other and
like,
separate
I understand
them.
But you needed to pick one or the other, you know?
100%.
Like, we either needed to know the whole time that she was in on it, or just she wasn't in on it the whole time.
Right.
You can't have the best of both worlds when you're writing it.
Right. I did wish there was a little bit more of a reckoning. We never really find what happens when Jen gets
rejoined
back
society.
Society.
Yeah.
But
she
I wanted
Martha in the ocean and then it's fine.
Yeah. Like I can't, and I actually get her forgiving Martha, because Martha genuinely didn't know and would have tried to protect her. But those other bitches, like, that's grounds for murder. Like, I'm not kidding. Like, you have reduced a human being to their core survival animal form and then let her be released upon you. She should have killed those fuckers.
Yeah. Well, you sicked her on three billionaires on a deserted island for 3 years, and now you're just having her.
But also, they did that to like their mother, their husband, you know?
Right.
They didn't care.
Right.
So they definitely didn't care about Jen.
Right. I do think the book would have felt more complete if we had learned how she had reacted, because it does feel a little too simple at the very end when. Because we get this like distant epilogue where it seems like, you know, somehow things have worked out. Like they've all reconciled in some, but we don't actually know what that looked like. The part that threw me for a bigger loop, though, was actually Marius's message, because the message seemed like it was sent, because he says you're in a lover with your lover's cave or whatever, which I took to mean that message was sent when Jen was still on the island and he believed she would join Martha. And so I was like, that means that message was sent like from where the book ends, like decades in the past.
Yes.
And so I was like, why did she give us that? Like, what was she telling us? Like, is there a book too? Like, what was that about? Are we going to fill in this time at some point?
What did he figure out?
Exactly. Because I believe in Marius. Like, Marius could have, but he could have found out like any number of like insane things that I'm just like, what is this about?
Right. That's the other one of the things I didn't like in the end. The other thing being, so it talks about the future they've created.
Mm-hmm.
And they even say at one point, like, most of this was mainly fixed in like 19 months. And I'm like, bullshit.
Yeah, that was like, all bullshit for me too.
Yeah.
I understand a lot of these solutions would be really great, but not everyone's going to buy in that fast, even if you tweak the algorithm. And like, people are selfish. And so I was like, this all sounds great and happy and blah, blah, blah. But like, too quick of a resolution. That's not how it would happen. I understand where you're pointing us, but like, I just, after everything we've been through, wrapping it up in that neat little bow, I was like, no, there needs to be a little more consequences. You can't just save the world by removing three people, which I know is part of a sociological debate there, but.
Right. It was definitely resolved way too quickly with the 3 years they managed to basically save it from the brink.
And everyone shares electric cars now, and there's more fish. The end.
Yeah, no, I know. Especially when you have like so many countries in the world that have to rely on.
But half the countries are like half future safe zones now.
Yeah, that didn't make sense.
That's
either.
Not happening.
But I appreciated it. It's a wishful thinking. But
of course, then it did say at the end there's that Enochite person who's fighting back or whatever that's president of the US now. So who knows? Like, there's still factions, but like, you could have dove more into the pushback. I mean, it would make the book way longer. I had issues with how. It's like, great ideas. They won't solve everything. That's not how this would go. Okay.
I do. So the reason I excuse it, because I agree with you, I was kind of like, okay, this is all too convenient how everything is just working out now. Like, again, especially someone who reports on politics, I was like, there are like more people than tech billionaires in the world who have a vested interest in oil, who have a vested interest in cutting down the rainforest. You know, it's like,
there are terrorists.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You can't just chase poachers with drones and call it good.
Literally. Like, these are not the only rich and powerful people in the world. So I did think it was a little convenient. The reason I accepted that, though, is because I think she does ultimately demonstrate the, like, cyclicalness of everything. Because the whole ending point is, like, history never ends. Like, we're never at a destination as humanity. We're always continuing. And so it seems like they had swung the pendulum so far to the other side that it was like once again extremism happening, right? Like, we just kind of go back and forth between two different versions of insanity, and it's like constantly on us and like our imperative to like be trying to keep it from actually like hitting one of those like ultimate ends.
Yeah.
And so I liked that at the end you could kind of see, like, despite their best efforts,
right,
humans also, are still humans, and like, things keep happening,
right? And if you fixed all this, overpopulation would end the world anyway.
I think it's interesting because, like, you bring up the pendulum, Casey. Mm-hmm. They swung so far right that they went so far left, and that's just going to keep happening until it like literally explodes, because that's how a pendulum works. So thinking about that idea is a little scary to think about as a current present day person. I think it was a little convenient. I also excused it, but I think it just shows the power of human stupidity and manipulation, and how we are very gullible individuals that are willing to accept things that happen online. And that's kind of what I took away from it. It's like, you're very easily manipulated from algorithms.
So I want to ask a quick question before we talk about the epilogue, but it talks about signs and shapes, and we're a slave to this sign tells you to do this, blah, blah, blah. How did you feel reading it this week with the global Microsoft outage?
Oh my God. Yeah, no, it made me really realize, oh God, we are really reliant on these technologies.
Right. Yeah. It's because the world she set up is real. Like, Amazon and Google are actually so important to like governments functioning that in a sense they kind of control the world. Like, it doesn't actually work like that behind the scenes. Like, they're not actually controlling things, but like, they have real clout because literally our governments like depend on their technology and can't function without them.
Yeah. So the epilogue. Everybody lives happily ever after. except the three billionaires. The only one who's alive when they find all the tapes and things from the suits the people are wearing is Badger. And Badger's like, yeah, I don't want to look at it because Badger's guilty and knows they killed their mom. But Link continues to exist there and tries to prepare for civilization. And they find him when he's like super old and crazy. But they talk about how each of the three did live. They weren't killed when we thought they were. Mm-hmm. And they each succumbed to different things. So Mark Zuckerberg wins. Jeff Bezos fell victim to his injury.
Yeah.
And what I really believe it's either Tim Cook or Apple or Google, but I think it's Apple, goes crazy and walks into the ocean. Which was actually a really sad little picture of that suit sitting there.
Yeah. In the fetal position.
Depressing. Okay. Yeah. But you know, it was like three different outcomes to, I don't know. What do you think of the epilogue? It was something.
I liked it.
And it's hidden in the book.
Yeah. After the acknowledgments is a crime to put that.
Yeah. In. Why did she do that? That's crazy. But I liked it mostly because like Jen's whole like point and demonstration in the book and like one of her like core messages is that you can't survive alone. Like, the key to surviving the apocalypse is you need a small group of people who you can genuinely trust. And that's the only way to survive. Like, everyone has to not get along, but like understand that like we all like cannot do this as individuals. And so I sort of liked the ending just because, right, like they could have gotten off the island if they had just worked together and they couldn't do it.
Mm-hmm. I knew the apocalypse was going to be fake the whole time.
Yeah, I did too.
Just sitting there watching them not work together, I was like, they're so smart but so dumb.
Yeah.
But it was a convenient video montage.
Selfish people will be selfish. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I was like, y'all work for tech companies. You know that doctored images and videos are a thing.
Right. Yeah, and they're like, so we've sent stewards in to take care of these future safe areas and they found this stuff. And I was like, okay.
Yeah. So. No, it was good. All right. Do you guys have book recommendations?
Yes, actually.
Oh, wow. Station 11?
No. And never read that when COVID's happening. But no, I thought about Sea of Tranquility, but I'm not going to say that one.
Yeah,
that's a good one.
Yeah.
So I'm actually going to go nonfiction and I'm going to give you two. I just read one called The End of Eden by Adam Welts. It's a new book. He kind of looks at different ecosystems, like niche ecosystems, and the butterfly effect that small changes in environmental things can have on the larger wild population. Like, the subtitle is Wild Nature in the Age of Climate Breakdown. So it's like a very realistic look at some of these problems. So I was kind of happy reading it before reading this because I had this really deep look. And like, it's not a fast book. It's not for everybody. But if you're interested in that kind of thing, it was fascinating. Like, I was reciting some of the stuff on my recent national park trip. Also, I had just been to the Redwoods, and reading this book that starts in the Redwoods, I was like, whoa. Anyway, it all ties together, you know? And then I also want to give you Let My People Go Surfing by Yvonne Chouinard, who is the founder of Patagonia, the brand. Mm-hmm. And I read his memoir, and then he donated his entire company to climate profit, like nonprofit. And it's kind of his business strategy, and he realized he was doing more harm than good, and he wanted to protect the natural land that he loved. And it also touches on how him and then Doug Tompkins and Chris Tompkins, Doug Tompkins founded North Face, started buying up land in like Chile and then donating it back as national parks, aka future safe zones, to start preserving things. So that was interesting because I was like, ooh, I feel like she took a little bit of the Patagonia North Face mindset into the Future Safe Zone thing. So
yeah,
two nonfiction things that tie in very well to this book.
Okay. I'm going to go completely left field and I'm going to recommend a video game / TV show.
What, The Last of Us?
No, Fallout. Fallout is a super interesting new TV series on Amazon Prime, and it talks about nuclear fallout and what happens after the bombs drop and the entire world, you know, is basically radiated, and how humans survive on the surface. But also the underlying thing is that there's this company called Vault Tech who builds all these vaults across the world, and rich people can buy into places, it like a spot in the vault to survive a nuclear holocaust and the nuclear apocalypse. And they are a monopoly. They are the only company that is doing this and owns this. So when you give that much power to those kind of people, they decide to do experiments on their residents of each vault. So each vault's a different experiment. And Lord, is it dark and gory, but it's super fascinating to talk about like humans and like all the different factors in survival and an apocalypse. And it's also really dark, funny, like dark humor. Like it's very funny. And the video game's a lot of fun too. I've been playing that recently. So there's a lot of video games. I'm playing Fallout New Vegas right now.
Okay, gamer interesting. Girl. Yeah, that sounds like a good recommendation. Okay, I have a few. Because reading this book was really interesting because I'm also watching Sweet Tooth right now, which I'm going to recommend as a show recommendation. So the concept of Sweet Tooth is that there's this event called the Great Crumble, which is basically tied to this scientific experiment that ends up creating a new virus. And it touches a lot of the same themes, like about how you survive. And it's like very political about like how humans organize themselves in the event of apocalypse and like what kinds of people become powerful, like the choices people make. And it's sort of like a children's show mashed into like a very dark, like survivalist thing. And it's almost has like a fairy tale vibe to it. It's very interesting. But anyway, the main character, the virus ends up basically like creating this like half human, half animal race where like humans can only have like children that have like animal qualities. But like, so yeah, the virus then like wipes out like 90% of humanity. So there's hardly any humans left. And it's about like these children who are like not fully human, not fully animal, and just the way they're treated. And like, there's this government that's like hunting them. And that's sort of their like call to action to like get people to join their cause. It's like demonizing the new children. And it's very interesting. Also want to recommend this really weird and somehow simultaneously extremely weird and boring movie called The Triangle of Sadness. It is also a commentary on like what skills make people successful now versus what skills make people successful in like an actual like survival scenario. And so basically the plot is like they're in this horrible shipwreck and then they all have to survive together. And the people who survive the shipwreck are a mix of like staff, so like poor people who like served the rich people, and then now rich people who have nothing and are living in the wilderness. So yeah, it's sort of a commentary on like the social dynamics and power and like how much things change when you take away modern society. So yeah, two television recommendations.
All right. I'm the only one who recommended books.
Yeah.
Yep. Good for you. If I had to recommend a book, it would be This Is How You Lose the Time War.
This is that's a good one. Yeah.
Yeah. Also very dense and about some sort of like very intense future.
I thought you were going to say Sea of Tranquility.
No, that was a good recommendation. All right. I mean, I think that's it. Rate and review our podcast. Visit us online at Busy Girls Pod pretty much everywhere, or busygirlspod.com.
Yeah. So connect with us. Tell us what you thought. Are you a fox or a rabbit? And that's it. I'm Caitlin.
I'm Casey.
And I'm Catherine. Thanks for listening. And when you get a chance, take a break with the Busy Girls Book Club.